Welcome to the Kitchen Counter Podcast, episode 66, Brown Food Tastes Better. Hey everybody, Roger here. Thank you so much for downloading and listening to this episode of the show. This is the Kitchen Counter Podcast, the podcast that helps aspiring home cooks grow their skills and confidence in the kitchen. Today, I've got a kind of an interesting episode for you, I think. I'm going to be talking about something I touch upon a lot in other episodes. In fact, anytime I've talked about cooking something, I've probably indirectly talked about this particular topic, and that is, why does food that is brown taste better? And I don't mean food that's brown naturally. I mean foods that we turn brown through the process of cooking. Why does browning food make food taste better? Now, before I get there, two quick things. I want to let you know that you can always send me an email to feedback@kitchencounterpodcast.com if you'd just like to say hi or if you have a question. I'd love to hear from you. I read and respond to every email I get. Now, the other thing I'm talking about is an exciting thing, and I haven't done this for a while, but I actually have a giveaway for you today. Now, you're going to have to listen through to the end of the episode to hear all the details, but just to give you a sneak peek, I'm going to be giving away two copies of Chrissy Teigen's new cookbook, Cravings, Recipes for All the Food You Want to Eat. This is a really, really cool cookbook, beautiful photography, really awesome recipes, and great stories, a lot of fun to read and just go through. I think it's one of the Amazon bestsellers in cookbooks, and it has been for several weeks now. So listen through to the end of the episode, and I'll tell you how you can have a chance to get your hands on a copy of Cravings. All right, folks, enough of the housekeeping. Let's dive right into why brown food tastes better. All right. I mentioned that, you know, I've probably talked about this in every other podcast episode I've done where I actually talk about cooking. And I'm not going to go into a whole heck of a lot of deep detail on this, so this won't be a super long episode. But I want to touch on something that is so common and so important and something we take for granted as cooks and home cooks. And that is the process of browning food for flavor. And we're going to be talking about a couple of specific things here. One is going to be the Maillard reaction, and I'll explain what that is in a second. And the other thing is caramelization. We're going to be talking about exactly what that is and how that works as well. And while I'm not a chemist, I'm not a food scientist, I will only briefly dive into the chemistry and the science behind why these processes occur. But one thing I want to address right out of the gate is why does it make food taste better? Now, I'm not even going to try to tackle the why it tastes better. I'm just going to tell you, and you'll have to believe me because I have a feeling you already know it, browned food just tastes better. So let's just do a thought experiment to see if I can illustrate what I'm talking about just with that statement, and then we can move beyond that. So let's imagine you come over to my house for dinner and I tell you I'm going to be making you a big, juicy ribeye steak. Okay. Now, actually, I'm going to give you an option. I'm going to make two ribeye steaks and you can choose the one that you want to eat. Okay. In one recipe, I'm going to bring a large pot of water to a boil. I'm going to lower that ribeye into the boiling water and let it cook until it's medium rare. And in the other dish, I'm going to preheat the broiler in the oven. I'm going to put that ribeye steak on a broiler pan under the broiler until it's medium rare. I'm not going to season either steak. I'm not going to do anything to either steak, but just their basic cooking method. One I'm boiling and one I'm broiling in the oven. Now I'm going to pull those steaks out when they're done. I'm going to slap them both on a plate and I'm going to set them in front of you and I'm going to say you can eat either steak that you want. I don't even think I have to ask you which steak you're going to want to eat. You look over at the boiled steak and it's just kind of this gray mass of meat sitting there. There's really no color. It's just gray and kind of grim looking. And on the other plate is the broiled ribeye, and it's going to actually have some color. It's going to be maybe browned and crisped up on the edges. Maybe some of the fat will have already rendered out of it. And I'm going to guess, I'm going to put thoughts into your brain, but I'm going to guess you're going to say that that broiled steak looks much more appetizing. And if you tasted both, it would taste better because it's been browned through the process of the Maillard reaction. So I don't have to explain why browned food tastes better. We just know that it does. I know that was kind of a goofy little thought experiment, but hopefully that just kind of helps illustrate the point here. Now, why am I even talking about this? If this is just something that kind of happens when we cook, why do we really even need to care about it? Well, there's a couple of reasons. One is it's important when I talk to people about cooking, whether it's cooking proteins like a meat or poultry, or whether it's baking things like bread or cooking vegetables, you know, caramelizing onions, whatever it is. It's important to understand that it doesn't always just happen on its own. You have to be a little bit intentional about how you're cooking in order to make sure you're getting the proper browning. So let me explain by explaining what the different types of browning are and the different ingredients and the different foods that it affects. And I think it'll become clear what I mean. I apologize. I'm going to get just a little bit technical. Like I said, not too deep into it, but just a little bit beyond the basic, take my word for it kind of approach. So all of the browning that we're going to talk about is part of a very, very common process, a common chemical process called pyrolysis. And what pyrolysis is basically the degrading of organic matter when it's exposed to high extreme temperatures. So the most extreme form of pyrolysis we're probably familiar with is if you've taken a piece of wood and tossed it on the campfire and that piece of wood starts to burn. It catches fire, burns, and eventually turns black and chars. Well, that's pyrolysis at the end stage. The same thing might happen if you've ever done any cooking at home, and I'm sure you have if you're listening to this podcast, and you've burnt something. You left that bread in the oven too long, or you forgot about that roasted chicken and you went back an hour later and found it just burnt to a crisp. That's pyrolysis, okay? That's not good browning. And one other extreme form of pyrolysis I might mention, which is also quite bad, is if you're cooking fatty meat, typically like on a grill. Have you ever noticed if you've gone to barbecue chicken or grilled chicken, and if you ever walk away and you get kind of a flare up because the fat is dripping down and you get the flames kind of shooting up, and you come back and you're like, oh, it doesn't even take long, but you kind of flip your chicken over, for example, and it's got that sooty blackened look to it. That's not good. That's pyrolysis occurring, and it just doesn't taste good. It ruins your food. So that's pyrolysis kind of at the extreme. Now, less extreme stages of pyrolysis are actually really good in cooking. And let's talk about the first one that typically occurs, which is called the Maillard reaction. Now, Maillard is named after the French gentleman that discovered this reaction many, many years ago. It's simply a chemical reaction that occurs when heat interacts with amino acids and sugars. So Maillard, and that's spelled M-A-I-L-L-A-R-D, Maillard reaction is responsible for a lot of fantastic flavors that we are used to in cooked food. So for example, a Maillard reaction, as I mentioned in the steak example, is responsible for the meat and the poultry that we eat that gets browned. It's responsible for the golden brown color on things like baked bread or pretzels, or if you simply make toast in the toaster, when that bread becomes brown from the toasting, that's the Maillard reaction at work. Roasted nuts are a result of the Maillard reaction, and as are roasted coffee beans. So if you've ever seen a coffee bean that's not roasted, it's green and it has a really... I don't know how to describe the odor. It's really not that pleasant. It's a really green, raw, kind of foresty sort of an aroma until you roast them, and then they become that deep, rich aroma and flavor, of course, that we associate with coffee. But those are all examples of how the Maillard reaction benefits food. Now, the interesting thing about the Maillard reaction is a Maillard reaction typically only occurs in foods and ingredients where there's a significant amount of protein into which these specific amino acids can interact with sugars. So the Maillard reaction doesn't happen with things like sugar, pure sugar. That's going to be caramelization. We're going to talk about that in a second. But the thing about the Maillard reaction, which you have to watch out for when you're cooking at home, is it can't occur if water is present. because the Maillard reaction generally doesn't start until you get to around 250 degrees Fahrenheit. And as you might know, the boiling point of water is only 212 degrees Fahrenheit. So as long as there's water present, you're really not going to get surface temperature above 212 degrees, and therefore you can't get the Maillard reaction going. So that's why if you're going to braise a piece of meat, or you're going to put a piece of meat in the slow cooker, if you don't sear it and brown it in a skillet first before you put it into the braising pot or before you put it into the slow cooker, it's going to be moist because you're going to be putting liquids into those vessels, and the Maillard reaction is not going to have an opportunity to occur. So if you want the lovely browned, rich flavor that the Maillard reaction gives you, you have to do things like brown your meat before you put it in a slow cooker or a braising vessel. Now, the Maillard reaction will naturally happen when you're doing things like broiling or roasting or frying or grilling, because the surface of your protein, your ingredient, will dry out, and then the surface can hit that Maillard reaction as long as it's above 250. So that's the Maillard reaction. That's the browning that occurs on our meats, on our poultries, on our breads, nuts, coffee beans. Chocolate is another example where the Maillard reaction comes into play. And again, the rule of thumb is it's typically proteins are present, and it cannot happen if there's chemical water involved, because again, the boiling point of water is too low for the Maillard reaction to get going. Okay, so let's put that aside for 1 second, and let's talk about caramelization. And that's a little bit different. That's next up on the scale of that pyrolysis scale I kind of talked about. So remember, if you let it go too long, things burn, and that's kind of the end game of pyrolysis. But the Maillard is kind of the early stage. Caramelization is the next stage. And caramelization is simply the breaking down of sugars in high heat, okay? And that usually starts around that 330 degree Fahrenheit mark, more or less depending on the sugar. But if, for example, it's just white granulated sugar, you're going to have to hit about 330 before caramelization will start to happen. Now, caramelization isn't just something you do to sugar to make caramel sauce or butterscotch, but that's certainly a very, very common result of caramelization. Any food that has a sugar content but not a high protein content can caramelize. So you're not really caramelizing a steak, right? That's more of the Maillard reaction going on with that steak because it's the amino acids and the sugars. You can, however, caramelize vegetables because they have fruits but not significant amounts of proteins or the right amino acids. So things like onions can be caramelized, and I've actually talked about that in a previous episode. Carrots can be caramelized. You can even caramelize green vegetables like broccoli and asparagus if you put it in an oven with a high enough heat, because all of those vegetables do have residual sugar. They have sugar in them. Some vegetables have more sugar than others. You know, carrots have more sugar than, say, Brussels sprouts, but they can both be caramelized. Fruits, of course, can be caramelized because they have a lot of naturally occurring sugar. So, you know, if you put peaches on the grill or if you put peaches in a hot skillet, you know, you can caramelize those as well. So that is caramelization. That happens above the 330 degree Fahrenheit mark. It's the next step on the way to, you know, that end stage of pyrolysis. Now, any of these things, any of these ingredients or foods that I've mentioned can end up burning, of course, if you leave them without tending to, or if you put them into a situation with too high of a heat, they can all end up burning and charring and turning black. And that, again, is kind of the last, the most extreme thing that can happen in this process. But we're really looking to be aware, you know, in the home kitchen about the browning methods, the Maillard reaction and caramelization, because they can impart a lot of flavor without any other work. You know, we're not talking about seasoning. We're not talking about putting a sauce on your food. Of course, all of that is good to do if you want even more flavor. And I'm not suggesting that you just cook a steak without seasoning it and just browning it's good enough. I'm not suggesting that. But it adds another layer of flavor and complexity to it. All right, I really didn't want to go into much more detail than that. I just wanted to do a really high-level, quick introduction to the Maillard reaction and caramelization. I hope that made sense, and I hope it kind of helps you be a little bit more aware in the kitchen on what's happening when your food is becoming brown. And the main takeaway I think I want to leave with you with again is when there's moisture or, you know, when there's water involved, the Maillard reaction can't take place. Here's another example. Have you ever taken ground beef and you wanted to brown the ground beef for, I don't know, you're making tacos or something? Have you ever noticed that if you start to brown the ground beef, and let's say you're using like an 80%, 20% fat mixture, and the ground beef starts to cook, and if you don't drain that, or if you don't cook it at a high enough temperature at the beginning, you just kind of get this grayish looking ground beef that's kind of sitting there simmering in its own, you know, water and fat, and it just, you drain it after that, and you just kind of have this really just gray. I mean, gray is the only way I know how to describe it. It doesn't taste very good. It just doesn't have much flavor. Well, that's because the Maillard reaction didn't have a chance to take place with that ground beef. So if you crank the heat up right away and really get some browning going before the ground beef can extract its moisture and its fat, and if you drain it frequently while you're cooking it, you'll actually get a little bit more browning going on and therefore a lot more flavor. So that's just one more example about how to keep an eye out for the Maillard reaction and how to help it along and give your food just more built-in flavor. All right, that's all I've got for now. Stay tuned after this segment to hear about how you can get a hold of a free cookbook. All right, everybody, I hope you found that quick intro to Maillard and caramelization interesting. As promised, I want to give you a quick heads up on how you can have a chance to get a hold of a free copy of Chrissy Teigen's cookbook Cravings, Recipes for All the Food You Want to Eat. I mentioned I'm doing a giveaway. So if you go over to kitchencounterpodcast.com/contest, I will have information and a link to where you can go to enter the giveaway contest. Now, I've done this before. This is an Amazon giveaway, so you do need to have an Amazon account to participate. But it's simply going to be as easy as following the link that I give you at kitchencounterpodcast.com/contest, following the directions on the Amazon page once you get there, and you'll find out instantly if you've won one of the cookbooks. So, good luck. There will be a, like I said, only two available. So if you're listening to this podcast later on, you know, weeks after this episode has been released, you're probably, unfortunately, going to have missed out. But keep listening to future episodes so you have a chance to hear when I have a giveaway right when it happens. All right, folks, thanks so much for listening. As usual, I really, really love hearing from you all. So feel free to send an email over to feedback@kitchencounterpodcast.com, and good luck on the cookbook. And if you have any questions, let me know about caramelization or the Maillard reaction. All right, folks, this is Roger with the Kitchen Counter Podcast. Until next time, happy cooking.